Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open,
my door's always open
to dreamers and friends.
Dreamers and friends.
Oh, when I'm attacked,
oh, oh, oh,
I protect and defend, because my name is America.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Karen Schoen, and you are listening to the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the AmericaOutloud.news network. Wonderful programming on that network, folks. If you haven't had a chance, please listen to some of our incredible talk hosts, and you will learn a lot, which is always wonderful. Also brought to you by my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. I can't say enough about them and the incredible work that they are doing to get our kids out of those public indoctrination clinics masquerading as public schools, where, trust me, they learn nothing except how to hate. And it is a very, very sad thing that I see happening all around us. The hatred is so incredible. In my life, which has been quite long, thank God, I have experienced and seen a lot of anti-Semitism, but nothing like what we are experiencing now. And I happen to believe with President Trump when he said that any Jew that votes for a Democrat really hates Israel and hates their religion. Maybe he could have worded it a little bit different, but that's okay. That's Donald Trump. We get the meaning. And I happen to agree with him. I do not understand how any Jew can vote for the group of people that outwardly say they hate you. And this is exactly what we see going on. Jews only comprise, I believe, 2.5% of the population of America. And yet the anti-Semitism and the hatred of most crimes is 60% against the Jews. How is that possible? Why is that happening? So now that we are in this holy time period of Easter leading to Passover, and people maybe hopefully are beginning to get a little history and understand what religion is about and how important it plays in our life and what we believe, I thought it would be a good time to go over some of the things that are going on in our country with regard to Israel. And I noticed that Speaker Johnson said that when he comes back to Congress this coming week, next week, the first thing that he's going to talk about is money for Ukraine. And I'm in disbelief. You have a group of people that outwardly say they hate Jews and they want to exterminate all Jews, and yet our attention is focusing on Ukraine. It's a very sad thing. And maybe people don't understand. That's okay. If they don't, that's sad too. But I thought it would be a very good idea for people to understand. And for that reason, I have asked David Crystal to join me today and explain, because he has been deeply involved. He's written books. He's written lots of articles. He does public speaking. And of course, he is involved in my favorite topic, which is education or lack thereof. So, David, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And maybe you can explain what's going on in the Jewish community and why there is so much hatred.
Good morning, Karen. Great to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
It is always a pleasure.
So firstly, it's important to note, your audience should know, that it wasn't always the case that quote unquote Jews are Democrats, or the majority of Jews are Democrats. In fact, I think prior to 1905, roughly, most Jews were Republicans. And I do believe 50 years from now, most Jews will be Republicans in America. Now, the data are skewed because again, I don't want to get into an emotive argument or discourse as to quote unquote, who is a Jew or what is a Jew. I have my own definition. The Israeli government and Hitler and others may have their own definitions. But if one were to define a Jew as someone who's vast majority Jewish, let's say has at least three Jewish grandparents, then it is not the overwhelming majority of Jews who vote Democrat. The problem is these polls include people who quote unquote self-identify, which is another issue we could talk about regarding gender and other vices in America today, but self-identify as Jewish, including people who are half Jewish, quarter Jewish, whatever it may be. And those people, for all sorts of sociological reasons, have a much greater tendency to be on the left and vote Democrat. So if you focus on those especially who have four Jewish grandparents and for whom Jewish observance and or Zionist activism is a serious concern, I would say the majority of those even today are voting Republican. And certainly given the demographic trends in the Jewish world and Jewish American Jewry over the next 50 years, I believe 50 years from now, the majority of American Jews writ large will be Republican.
Oh, well, that is good to hear. And I never looked at it that way. Thank you. That was a great explanation, and I really appreciate it. Okay. Do you think that the people who are supporting, quote, the Palestinians actually have an idea what Palestine is all about and how it came about and what their beliefs are? Or are they just demonstrating because they're paid to demonstrate or just demonstrate? I don't see how anyone can support a group of people whose main goal and objective is to kill another group of people. Am I wrong?
You're not completely wrong, but it's all of the above. Of course, there's always a George Soros crowd who are what I call political mercenaries who get paid to do what they do, and they may not even believe what they're chanting. You know, they just might be collecting a paycheck, whether it's about the open border or Israel or so-called Palestine. And then there are the masses who are just ignorant. And unfortunately, you can't exclusively blame them because the Israeli government is to blame as well. And frankly, the majority of so-called Jewish intellectuals in America are to blame as well, because they too have been using the term Palestinian, I believe wrongfully, for decades now. And that term has been institutionalized and it should never have been. So your audience should know that the term Palestinian was originally a geographical reference, like New England or New Englander, right? There's no New Englander genes or New Englander language or New Englander state or New Englander race. There was never a Palestinian genetic pool, a Palestinian state. It's simply an area whose, you know, rough boundaries have changed a little bit here, a little bit there, depending on who or what defines it. That was originally the Roman redefinition, Syria Palestina or Palestina, to redefine Israel after the Romans slaughtered the Bar Kokhba revolution and wanted to change all the names to disconnect the Jews from their homeland. Operative term, the Jews and their homeland. The Arabs didn't even start calling themselves Palestinians until I think the first time was 1959. The 1959 United Nations yearbook is the first such yearbook that referenced the quote-unquote Palestinian people. So 11 years after the establishment of the State of Israel, the term Palestinian gets morphed, gets co-opted, gets socially constructed or deconstructed or reconstructed to suddenly become a new ethnicity, as if there were Jews, Arabs, and Palestinians in the British Mandate. No, there were Jews and Arabs in the British Mandate. Now, we could get myopic and talk about how they're really, you know, Arab mongrels. They have Moabite blood, maybe a little bit of, you know, Turkish blood, Slavic blood, because the Ottomans brought Slavs down into that area because the Arabs neglected that area in the 1800s. But let's just call them Transjordanian Arabs, you know, roughly speaking. So basically, these Transjordanian Arabs redefined themselves, and in mass, they probably didn't even buy into that redefinition until the late 60s, but they redefined themselves as Palestinian for what purpose? To rewrite history, because history is on the side of the Jews slash Zionists. And if they could rewrite history to make the Jews the majority, instead of the minority, and to make Jews seem like the oppressors instead of historically oppressed, which is what the Jews are, they could change the dynamic to allow them political support that they might otherwise not have had. And unfortunately, the Arabs slash enemies of the Jews have used that tool remarkably well. And you could blame the Israeli government for facilitating that by having the vast majority of Israeli politicians use the term Palestinians over the last few decades, and they still do.
Yes, and that you're right, that presents a big problem because people begin to identify the fact that Palestine is a country of which it is not. It is only a landmass. Now, why? Okay, our government is pushing a two-state solution, which I think is beyond insane. But can you describe that so our listeners will know what that means and why it's insane?
So we should thank the Lord, whoever your Lord is, my Lord said somebody, you should thank the Lord that Yasser Arafat was stupid enough or arrogant enough or selfish enough to reject the multiple delicious deals that were offered to him in the 1990s and turn of the century, because the so-called Palestinians will never get a deal like that again. And that deal would have been disastrous. That would have posed a serious existential threat to the state of Israel, much more so than Gaza is posing today. So the reason you cannot have a large, independent, so-called Palestinian state or another Arab state in Judea and Samaria is, firstly, a lot of Israel's water comes from the mountain aquifer that underlines Judea and Samaria. And there's no doubt in my mind, besides redirection, that the new Arab country called, Palestine, so to speak, would not only redirect, but may likely poison any water that they couldn't redirect for themselves, and just radically reduce the water supply to Israel, which in and of itself would be a tremendous existential threat because there isn't much water in the Middle East to begin with. And Israel's blessed to have, enough as it is, but it won't if that Palestinian state, so to speak, were to exist. And the other existential threat is that the mountain ridge in Judea and Samaria is kind of like a mini Golan Heights and has a direct view of large swaths of Israel's most populated areas, and poses a direct line of vision, sniper security threat, irrespective of or tank threat, irrespective of whatever tools the opponent might use to directly fire on Israeli cities. And of course, the primary threat is if it's linked to Jordan, Iranian proxies could move major weapons, possibly weapons of mass destruction, through Iraq, through Jordan, into the new Palestinian state, which then can be used upon the remaining state of Israel. So for all sorts of reasons, a so-called Palestinian state in Judea and Samaria would pose an existential threat. The best solution is if there's a cross transfer, and anyone who calls me racist for saying so is racist, because there have been many cross-population transfers after World War I, particularly the Turks and the Greeks, and we just transferred all the Jews out of Gaza, the Gaza Strip, in 2005 in exchange for peace and got a slaughter fest, 100,000 rockets, and then October 7 in return. So if we could transfer peaceful Jews out of Gaza, why can't we transfer not-so-peaceful Arabs, Israeli Arabs, or Arabs in the Galilee, etc., into the new Palestinian state, which really should be a confederation with Jordan? So if we move enough Arabs out of Judea and Samaria, and even Israel proper, into a new Palestinian-Jordanian, Transjordanian Arab state — they really should be calling it Transjordania — and that becomes a confederate state of in and of itself, then we have a target to bomb if ever they attack us. And it's a completely legitimate target, whereas now we're fighting an asymmetrical war. And if we bomb a fledgling Palestinian state, we're the oppressors again. We're the bullies beating up on the little new guy. So under no circumstance can you have another Arab state. You could have a Jordanian confederation that includes parts of what's now the Palestinian autonomous regions, but to have Jordan exist bordering an independent new Arab state would be a disaster for Israel.
Yeah, I think it probably Jordan is saying, no, we don't want it either. I know Egypt, the first thing that they did when all of this started was put up a wall and say, no, we don't want these people either. So they know that these people, the Hamas leaders, are nuts, and they know what's going on. And I agree with you. I don't see, and I didn't understand why Israel gave so much leeway to the Arabs who lived in Israel to become part of the government, knowing full well that this is the way they think. They're not going to change the way they think just because they're living in Israel and have freedom. They don't look at it that way. They still look at it as, we have to kill all the Jews. We have to kill all the Israelis. We can't allow them to exist. And I don't know, how do you change that mindset? That's the biggest question to me.
Well, that goes back to Israel's original sin of not having any constitution, in particular not having a Zionist constitution. So people call the Jewish state and a Zionist state, but it really has for the most part not behaved as such. And I don't want to get too myopic. I could talk about the Brother Daniel decision, things like that. But firstly, Zionism is not Judaism. Zionism is supposed to be about Jewish ethnocentrism. And it's supposed to be about the right of the Jewish race to return to its ancestral roots, its ancestral homeland of Judea, otherwise known as Palestine, Canaan, Israel, whatever you want to refer to the land, and establish peace, sovereignty, security within those boundaries. Just as the Irish have peace, sovereignty, and security over Hibernia, the Jews should have peace, sovereignty, and security within and over Judea, now called the State of Israel. The problem is there's no such Israeli constitution that codifies that. So the focus has been more on Israel being a democracy over the last 50 years rather than being a Jewish state. And demographically speaking, this focus on democracy cannot guarantee a Jewish majority and certainly cannot guarantee laws and norms and policies that are in the interests of the Jews. So the first thing Israel has to do is to create a Zionist constitution whereby Jewish majority power is guaranteed. And we could talk about technicalities as to how to do that. But Israel has to stop promoting itself as the only democracy in the Middle East. Israel has to promote itself as the Jewish state, which has very strong democratic leanings, but it's not supposed to be a democracy to the point of destroying its Jewish character. And that really is the crux of a lot of the major sociological issues and political issues facing Israel today.
Okay, so there is a major difference between being Jewish and being a Zionist. And usually all I hear is, oh, those Zionists, the Zionists, the Zionists. Can you explain that difference and why the target then becomes the Jews, who many are not Zionists? It's a very confusing political structure.
That's very complex. Well, first of all, you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. You have to be humane. I'm not Irish, and I say the Irish have the right to exist. A Zionist is basically someone who believes the Jews have the right to exist in the Jewish homeland. So there's no gray there. It's binary. So either you tolerate Jews and you're a Zionist, or you're anti-Semitic and you're not a Zionist. A lot of people conflate the term Jewish with Judaic or observing Judaism. I happen to be both Jewish and Judaic. Okay, but and don't get me wrong, my Judaism inspires my Zionism and my Zionism inspires my Judaism, but you do not have to be a religious Jew to be a Zionist at all. And you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist, actually. So in terms of the Jews themselves, any Jew who's not a Zionist is by definition a self-hating Jew. How could you be a Jew and say, either the Jews should not exist or they should exist as oppressed people throughout the world, they have no right to return to their ancestral homeland? That makes no sense. So unfortunately, Jewish history is replete with self-hating Jews, backstabbing Jews, typical 10 to 20% of our population that stabs its fellow Jews in the back to get ahead and to curry favor with the Gentiles or whatever boss or corporation or government owns or controls them or whom they want to impress. And that's always been a fight that the Jews have to fight. We typically say, the worst enemies of the Jews are the Jews themselves. And it's self-hating Jews like George Soros that make our lives very difficult. But as long as the majority of Jews are united, we could overcome them as well as our traditional enemies.
Yes, and that's an absolutely big task, but it's something that we have to be united on. The Jews, like David said, like any other group, ethnic group, they have a right to exist. They're human. So even if we separate and take out religion, they're people, they're human beings, and they have a right to exist. David, I really appreciate your explanation. So your proposal would be that the Arabs should be relocated, then what would happen to the land that they call Palestine?
We have to stop using the term Palestine. If you're asking me what happened to the Palestinian autonomous regions, so the pre-existing, in my plan, the pre-existing Palestinian autonomous regions would be attached to Jordan, but not as an independent state, as part of a new Transjordanian confederation. And they would have autonomy within the overarching Transjordanian Confederation. So it will still be the Jordanian government and security apparatus and military that we'd be dealing with. So should they, meaning Jordan, the new Jordan, go to war with us, just like the previous Jordan, we have an address. We have a target. We know whom to bomb, and we could win that war. The problem is Israel has a hard time in terms of PR and the media winning asymmetric wars. So that's why there should not be another Arab state there. Now, in terms of population transfer, It's not a significant percentage, but basically Israel should identify those Israeli Arabs who are most inimical to the Jewish state. Whether they use lie detector tests, we could, debate the details, but they should determine which Arabs are strictly, simply not, there are many Israeli Arabs who are not loyal to the state of Israel, and those are the ones who should be deported into the new Transjordanian so-called Palestinian Confederation, and they should live there in peace, and we'll be in peace, and we'll secure a Jewish majority in our, slightly reconfigured state of Israel as a result of that peace plan. And everyone should be happy. But that presumes that their goal is happiness and not our extermination. But the goal of most Transjordanian Arabs is our extermination.
Yeah, that's the big problem. What did you think about the Abraham Accords?
Well, they, of course, Abraham Accords, are good. Who would oppose them? Unfortunately, these are very fickle things because the second Iran and Iranian proxies decide to go to war with us, suddenly, I won't say they disappear, but they're on the back burner, and business ties or the fledgling business ties between Israel and the Emirates and Morocco, suddenly become more fledgling or less concrete. So that may just take time. It just might be a matter of decades before the business ties between Israel, Morocco, and Bahrain and the Emirates, maybe hopefully soon Saudi Arabia, become so strong that something like October 7th can't scuttle them. That might just take time. But certainly it's a beautiful thing, and Trump helped facilitate it. And God willing, we'll have some sort of economic cooperation with Saudi Arabia soon. And once that's done, Iran is really on its heels, and the tables are turned.
Well, that would be a wonderful thing, and I would look forward to that in the next Trump administration. David, one of the things that you did and accomplished was put together the crystal clear tutors. In the couple of minutes that we have left, would you explain that to everyone and how they can get a hold of you?
Sure. So, ironically or not, I was always a finance guy by background. When the crap hit the fan, the mortgage-backed security crisis, I asked myself what transferable skill sets I have, and I realized I had tutored when I was a kid. And I also realized there was no Kaplan or Princeton Review along the A1A corridor in Miami Beach, where I used to live. So I decided to create Crystal Clear Tutors, which focuses on maximizing SAT scores, ACT scores, GMAT, GRE, LSAT scores, all the major standardized tests. And we pretty much cracked the code. And over the years, we've gotten about 1,000 students. I was about to say kids, but some of them are older, students slash kids into top 100 universities, usually top 50 universities. So I have a lot to say about education in America as well, by the way, parenthetically. So you could bring me back about that. But basically, if anyone wants to contact me, it's crystalcleartutors.com. My email address is Dave, D-A-V-E, at crystalcleartutors.com.
Now,
1-888-91 prep is the number.
okay, and you don't have to live in Florida to take advantage of Crystal Clear Tutors. It
Right.
doesn't matter where you live because we have learned, and that was the other side of COVID, that many things can be done remotely, and doing them remotely is can be just as rewarding if you have the right coach and the right people and the right information. And if you're giving your kids the ability to pass some of these insane tests that have been so watered down to begin with, it's really a shame. The most important thing that you can do is make sure that your kid has a good education. And right now, we know for a fact they don't. So, David, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. It has been a pleasure and very much appreciated all of the hard work that you're doing. And hopefully, lots of people will call, and I'll be mentioning this again throughout our time together on all of the shows because, as everyone knows, education is my hot button. So, thank you so much for everything that you have done.
A pleasure is mine. Thank you, Karen. Appreciate you.
Well, folks, it certainly would not make sense to have a clear mind full of knowledge without having a body that goes along with it. And why am I talking about that? Because those Heelwright bars are really good and they have really helped me. I have noticed that I have had a lot more energy and I am not worried anymore about making sure that I'm eating the right things and I'm not having any problems with my metabolic functioning. And I think they're a wonderful asset to anyone who is concerned with their health. So please go to the Heal Right website. Go to the Heal Right website and try them. You have nothing to lose and you will feel a lot better and healthier. You have been listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance, and their amazing project called the Micro School. Put that together with crystal clear tutoring, and your child will never have a problem in their life figuring out life's problems. And believe me, there are many. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The buildup of spike proteins is dangerous to your health. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body, removing the spike proteins, allowing your body to repair from within. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to americaoutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to americaoutloud.shop. That's americaoutloud.shop. And use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created heart and vascular health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud for 25% off.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body, and now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is XLEAR.com.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen, and you are listening to the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. Please check out GoFLCA. Join the Alliance. You don't have to be in Florida. What you have to do is see what the Alliance is doing and copy it in your state. Create a micro school and get your kids out of those indoctrination clinics masquerading as public schools. They are a disgrace, and your child will learn nothing. And boy, will they learn nothing, except maybe to hate you and to hate America and lots of hate, which is so sad. And this is a big problem that we have, especially as I'm seeing all of these demonstrations for Palestine, for Hamas, for Sharia. I don't think these kids have any clue as to what they are talking about or what they are fighting for. And certainly, there is no way that they could know anything about democracy and support any of these groups. Democracy, nothing about a republic, forget about a republic. So, as always, I love to talk to Claire Lopez because she has done so much work, hard work, on exposing Muslims and Sharia and also China. So those are my two topics that have come in the news in the last couple of days. And maybe Claire can shed a little light on the topic. And congratulations, Claire. She is now the president of Lopez Liberty, LLC. And her mission is to alert Americans about the national security threats that we have from the Islamic movement. Thank you, Claire, for your hard work. We really appreciate it. Do you think these kids know what they're fighting for?
Well, first of all, thank you, Karen, for having me on the show again. I'm always glad to be with you and talk over these topics of the day. You know, as you say, when we look on TV sometimes and we see these kind of mic on the street interviews that they do or mic on a university campus interview, and they go up to random students, right? And they'll ask them, which river are you talking about? Which sea is that? From the river to the sea, that chant they do. And the kids have not the foggiest idea which river. The Amazon? The Nile? They have no idea. Which sea are they talking about? The Atlantic Ocean? They have no idea. And if you were to ask them, and some of these interviewers do, what are the boundaries of the country called Palestine? They have no idea, of course, because it never existed, doesn't exist today, and never has. They really are clueless. So your point, you know, about public education, Karen, is absolutely spot on. These kids are learning nothing. I mean, from the basics of geography, world geography, let's start there. To anything more complicated like Middle East, relationships and wars and history. They don't know any of that.
It is so sad. I see when they're chanting and I'm looking at these girls and I'm thinking to myself, do they have any idea how women are treated in these countries? And in Israel, I know that when the Arabs in Israel, the Arab women, they're treated with respect, unless maybe something is different in their home. I'm not talking about that. But overall, if they live in Israel, they're treated with respect. There is no restrictions on them. And yet, if they're in Gaza and they're under the Hamas rule, oh my gosh, the restrictions that are on them. Could you share some of the differences with us?
Sure. So the first thing to know, of course, is that Israel is a Western-style, liberal, parliamentary democracy. It is a place where every citizen has the same rights under, the Israeli system. And that means that of the 20, 21 or so percent of Arabs, some of whom are Muslim, in Israel, They have held positions, obviously, in the Knesset, their parliament, in the Supreme Court, as judges, as lawyers, obviously. They have held positions and do have positions right now in the Israeli Defense Forces. They have exactly the same rights as every other Israeli citizen of whatever background. Moreover, Israel is probably, or maybe I wouldn't even say probably, it is the only country in the entire Middle East where there are gay pride or LMNOP kind of flag waving demonstrations and protests permitted in the streets. I don't think people who have never traveled to Israel, and I've been there multiple times, I don't think they have any idea what a freewheeling, free society it is under rule of law, yes, but with equal rights for all, no matter your ethnic or religious background, be you Christian, be you Muslim, be you Jewish, or anything else. It is a Western-style liberal democracy.
So it is truly a melting pot where all people of all ethnicities basically get along. And I think that was a big problem, especially when you're living under Hamas rule or the strictest Muslim rule, where their major goal is to kill the Jews. They hate the Jews. They hate the Jews because of a multitude of reasons. But our kids that are demonstrating today, I don't think they have any idea what they're demonstrating.
No, they don't have any idea. They've never studied Islamic law or Sharia. They don't know that the laws of Islam, of Sharia, are derived in large measure out of the Quran, which Muslims believe is the literal word-for-word, textual word-for-word of God. Allah, of course, is Arabic for God. They don't know what's written in the Quran or how, you know, women or how Jews are depicted in the Quran, how non-believers, how infidels, kufar, are described in the Quran and in the hadiths. Those are the sayings and deeds attributed to Muhammad, the sirah, the biography of Muhammad, sirah wasulallah, or the tafsirs, the commentaries on the Quran and other Islamic writings. These things are doctrine. And those places that enforce the doctrine of Islamic law, of Sharia, like under Hamas rule, under the rule in the Islamic Republic of Iran, in Taliban-ruled Afghanistan, for example, these places enforce Islamic law. They enforce Sharia. They're in their constitutions. And I don't think most of our students have, I mean, even if they could find these places on a map to begin with, that they even know that such things exist.
I could just see them having a trans day of visibility under Sharia.
It wouldn't last very long.
They
wouldn't last very long, literally speaking. Literally, their lives would not last very long.
No, because people don't realize that these are things that are in the Quran that are totally 100% unacceptable. And Muslims have the right to lie, to gather the people, to convert them, but they have zero tolerance for a woman with a brain and LGBTQABCD for anything. They are zero when it comes to that.
There is a set of supposed crimes and punishments called the hudud crimes and punishments. There are seven of them, and they derive directly from the Quran, again, believed to be the literal word of God. And among these seven crimes are simply being, not doing anything necessarily, but being homosexual. Apostasy, of course, leaving Islam, adultery. These are death penalty crimes. Found, discovered, convicted of these things in a Sharia court, and that's the end of your life. And that is absolutely lawful under Sharia.
Now, you said adultery.
Yes.
What doesn't that mean? A woman cannot have adultery.
No, it means
both. But a man.
No, it means both. It is both for men and for women.
Okay, but they have multiple wives. So I guess if you're married and you have multiple wives, then that's.
Oh, that's not adultery. No.
Adultery. Oh, okay.
That's not adultery.
Okay.
That's called polygamy, and it's perfectly lawful under Islamic law.
And we're importing these people here with absolutely no desire to even show them or explain or have them join in a Western way of life. We are accepting Sharia and the fact that they practice it, and that's okay. It's not
okay,
folks.
You know, our national motto, I mean, in addition to what's on the coins, "In God We Trust," but the national motto from the beginning was always "E Pluribus Unum," out of many one, in that those who would come here to America lawfully would share the same appreciation for our foundational principles, which are Judeo-Christian, which are included in our foundational documents, Declaration of Independence, Constitution, Bill of Rights, and so forth. But that's not what's happening now, certainly not with the wide open southern border, across which we have no idea who, how many are coming from where, with what ideas, with what intentions, be they good intentions, ordinary, just want a better life, find work, or malign intentions of the jihadis, of the gangs, the criminals, of the narco-traffickers, human traffickers, child traffickers, of the jungle tigers coming from China. We have no idea. No idea.
We are going to be in for a world of hurt, I fear. And I think that the summer of love in 2020 was just a minuscule example of what we could be facing in the summer of 2024. Claire, I know that you are also very astute and know a lot about what's going on in China. And I read that President Biden, by the way, had a conversation with Xi in China. And it looked to me like Xi was reading Biden the Riot Act instead of the other way around. It seemed like Xi was setting the table and telling Biden that he had better do what Xi says and lay off of China. What was that conversation all about? Was it important? Why would they didn't even announce that they were going to have it, did they?
No. So this is the first time that President Joseph Biden, U.S. has spoken with Chinese President Xi Jinping since last November 2023, when Xi Jinping was in California for the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting there in San Francisco. And you're right. Reporters are saying that they did not even see this phone call on the daily schedule that's released to the media, released to the press each day. It was not even on the calendar for today that there was to be a phone call between Biden and Xi. But nevertheless, there was a readout from the White House and now from other reporters, too, about that phone call, which took place earlier today. This is now Tuesday. We are on Tuesday, April the 2nd here when the phone call took place. And from the readout that we're getting, the two discussed Taiwan. No particular red lines were drawn by President Biden for Xi Jinping and his aggression. They discussed artificial intelligence. climate change. Biden apparently reportedly raised concerns about the Chinese support for Russia's defense industrial base, that in the context of the Russian invasion and aggression against Ukraine. Biden also apparently brought up the United States' enduring commitment to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Not of North Korea, of the entire Korean Peninsula.
Is that a joke?
That is the readout that we're getting from the White House issued a statement, official statement from the White House, and reporters have been briefed as well about some additional of these details.
So was Taiwan discussed, and the fact that China is moving their navy to surround Taiwan, and what is going to be happening there? Did they even discuss that?
Well, apparently President Biden did bring up the subject of Taiwan, and reportedly, according to the White House statement, President Biden emphasized the importance of maintaining peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait, which, of course, we know is international waters. And the rule of law and freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. Now, we know that of late, well, not just of late, but an increasing pattern over the last years, at least since the Biden administration came to office in 2021, the Chinese military, in particular its Navy, has been acting with increasing aggression, not just against Taiwan, Karen, as you rightly mentioned there, but against others of American allies in the South China Sea, just mentioned here. For example, aggression against our friend and ally, the Philippines. Aggressive moves to at least to co-opt, to coerce, to co-opt, to threaten, to bully others of Asian Pacific Island nations, which take China and its navy ever further out eastward from the Asian mainland to the first and then the second of what they call the island chains, and that, if they are able, if we allow them to continue these aggressive moves, that brings China ever closer to, for example, to Guam. And of course, this is very threatening. This is dangerous to give the impression, as Biden does, the impression, at least the perception, that the United States has no red lines, is not going to stand up to China, and is projecting instead a compliant, weak impression to the PRC.
This must be very scary for the people of Taiwan. I really feel for them, because here they are sitting and being an ally and protectorate and everything else of America. And America goes, well, China, be good. That's about the context of what I got. In the article that I read, let me just see if I can find it. It says that she emphasized that the United States has launched an endless stream of measures to suppress China's economy. Can you believe that one? Trade, science, and technology. And the list of sanctions against these Chinese companies is getting longer and longer. And it is unacceptable, because if the United States insists upon suppressing China's high-tech development and depriving China of its legitimate right to develop, they will not sit by idly. So,
well, what we could add to this little litany here, perhaps, is what was not, at least reportedly, discussed today in the Biden-Xi phone call. There was no mention that we know of, reportedly, of China's unfair trade policies or consequences for those, as former President Trump did impose on China. How about the intellectual property theft by China of American business, technological secrets, trade secrets, intellectual property? No mention of that that we know of. How about the pouring of fentanyl and other opioids across our wide open southern border when we know that the fentanyl that the Mexican cartels traffic across that southern border of ours comes from chemical precursors that come out of China, that are exported from China to Mexico to the drug cartels there, which mix them up. And oh, by the way, China also provides the pill presses to then press out the tablets, the pills, after they mix up the chemical precursors and make fentanyl. Not any word of that that I heard or have seen in any of the reporting to come out of the meeting today. How about all of these secret Chinese police stations across the United States, which are not diplomatic facilities? How about, in addition to those, the multiple, what they call special service stations across America? Again, not diplomatic facilities. Not a word about those that I know of.
Yeah, how about all of the men that we see, the Chinese men that are coming across their border? If China was so wonderful, why is Xi letting them come here? Why was he sending them? Basically, to me, in order to get out of China, you have to have permission. Nobody knew about it. They had to know about it.
And not like that at all. And furthermore, to get from China through some intermediary, you know, travel, be it through, you know, Turkey or the Middle East or some other place, and then onwards to, let's say, South America, and then from someplace in South America. By the way, Chinese can fly into Ecuador, to Quito, the capital there, without a visa. So that's a popular landing place for Chinese coming from Asia to South America. But all that lengthy travel, that costs a lot of money, $35,000 maybe per person. And then they have to pay for the additional transport, a lot of it by buses, headed north, let's say it is Ecuador, north from there, all the way on up through the Darien Gap into Central America, on up from there, further through Mexico. How do they pay for all this? The ordinary Chinese person has nowhere near that kind of, you know, expendable, disposable cash on hand. So how does that work?
Yeah, I have a feeling that there was a lot more to this than meets the eye. And hopefully you'll come back and tell us again what's going on in the Chinese realm with the CCP, and how their real goal, I believe, is to take over America. Claire, thank you so much for joining me today. It is always a pleasure to speak with you. You are a wealth of knowledge, and I appreciate it. And we will have you back again because I enjoy talking to you. Where
Sounds
can people
good.
Find
thank
you, Claire?
Thank you very much. I'll be glad to come back. See
and,
you next time.
Yeah, where can people find you?
Oh, well, I am at theunitedwest.org or .com. I am at the Citizens Commission on National Security. All of these interviews and my writing are posted there. I write for a Newsmax blog site called In Defense of Liberty. I'm an advisory board member for the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. And don't forget, take a look at American Truth Project, that website. And then I'm on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Truth Social, of course, and also Telegram.
Well, you are my go-to person when it comes to China, so thank you so much. And Sharia, thank you so much for your hard work. Folks, you have been listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. Please go FLCA, pay attention to what the Alliance is doing, and make sure you get your kids out of those schools. I can't say it enough over and over again. If you want your kid to be able to succeed in life, they're not going to do it if they attend a public school. Folks, the Republicans have no will to win. They just gave Biden his $70 billion to fund this government, which will do nothing more probably than give the illegals that are here, all 10,000 of them, some form of work pass so that they can take away the jobs from the minorities, because right now the minorities are useless to the Democrats, and that is what they are seeking to do. They are on the replacement line, and this is the replacement of our country. And it isn't that they're brown or black. It doesn't make any difference. It's that they don't know America. They will never learn about America. They will never learn our values, because the Democrats, once they get in office, will turn America into a communist country. Our Constitution be damned. They don't care about it. They're not interested in it. And that's the reality. So before you do anything and pull a lever or put in and fill a circle for a particular candidate, make sure that you know who they are. Make sure that you have questioned them. And let's get rid of those rhinos in our offices right now, whether they're in the state, whether they are in your local government, whether they are in the federal government. It is up to us. This is going to be a huge loss if we allow the Democrats to get in office. We cannot let that happen. They are communists. They do not believe in America, and they do not believe in the American people. It is up to us to make sure that that does not happen. Remember, if you have a child that is struggling for the SATs, check out davidscrystalcleartutors.com. And now, have a wonderful week, and I will see you again next week.